Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see.
Wow. Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
We look good today. I'm sorry. What?
You're being generous. I think you're saying that as a way of saying that you look good.
No, well, first of all, I'm not denying it. I mean, look what's in front of me. I think I look good. I sort of put together my look.
No.
And I think you look good. I think you look a stud. I think like your necklace is working for me.
I'm wearing my t-shirt and that's it. I don't know what you're...
Minimalist. It's fine. Can you just take the compliment? Wow.
I actually won't take the compliment because I'm suspicious that you're only complimenting me in the we sort of... conjugation of this, because you want to compliment yourself and say that you look good, which you do. I just don't
you
think
need
you
to
need
examine
to...
that. That's a whole therapy that I'm not qualified to go into. You know, I did look into therapists this week. You'd be proud of me.
Are you ready to make the jump from
therapizing myself to having someone with a degree do it? Yes, it's time.
Now, what are you looking into? You want to go in person again? You want to?
Well, I just want an in-person session. You know what I mean? Like for example, are you caught up on Mayor of Easttown?
I still have not seen an episode, and I know I'm really...
The way you were able to perform that stunning sketch written by Sudi Green on this week's episode of SNL about, that was sort of based in the world of Mayor of Easttown, wouldn't we say? Mm-hmm, it was as if you've seen every episode. I mean, you were so stunning. No. That Delco accent you did, that was so good.
Delco, Pittsburgh. Delco.
I gotta go home and make dinner for my two daughters and son.
I'm picking up a hoagie from Wawa. And,
you gotta get the coffee from Wawa for my daughters.
My daughters.
My daughters.
They like the coffee. The coffee and the hoagie from Wawa.
They like their hoagie from Wawa hoagie.
Oh, guess what? I saw Hunter Biden at the at the local Hobby Lobby. I don't even know. Do they have Hobby Lobby in Pennsylvania or Delaware?
No, I don't know what they have outside of Wawa. I feel like it's been such a... Wawa has really taken the world stage, hasn't it? It really has stormed the ball.
Wawa, I just want to make sure that people understand that Wawa is not just some like location punchline.
No,
it's a way of life. It is a respectable establishment that actually makes great food. I mean... We need more, I think, and there's a hole in the market for places like Wawa across the country, like between a 7-Eleven and like, you know, let's say a Walmart.
Careful. Right. So it's sort of meeting in the middle there. It's what Andrew Yang would call a bodega. You know what
sure,
I mean? What
sure.
that absolute fool would call a bodega.
That's good.
Anyway, so going to float away from that one so you don't have to weigh in because that'd be bad for you. But let's just talk for a second. I want to tell you, I TV is being my therapy right now.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Between Mayor of Easttown and Girls 5 Eva.
And The Circle. Let's talk about the finale of The Circle.
Let's wrap up The Circle. Wow. What a moment.
What a moment. Our winner won. That's all we'll say.
Our winner won. Delisa. She took the crown. Best catfish in the damn business. Found out today, she found out she was pregnant while she was in The Circle.
Oh my God, and she still played that game.
Imagine that. For a second, imagine that. You got the fact that you're pregnant sitting right here.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got the game sort of swirling around. You know what I
mean?
She's
still catfishing as a man, still convincingly catfishing as a man.
You know what I'm
going
to say.
There's no such thing as gender.
Name another legend. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh my God.
Name another legend besides Lisa. You can't. I'm waiting for hours. No one can.
Roni's back. Real Housewives of
New York. Roni's back. I'm thrilled. We have Ebony K. Williams talking in her first scene, talking about how she takes shits on dates. I'm in.
I'm not sold on Ebony just yet. I don't know why.
You're a bitch. That's why you're a fucking bitch.
There's no reason. Maybe I need to research more before I... See, I've decided not to weigh
Mama,
in
let's
until,
research.
Mama, let's research. I mean, but she's a Fox News gal, though?
No, queen. I'm sure she's made appearances on Fox News.
All right.
First of all, just because you go on Fox News doesn't make you persona non grata.
I understand she's not persona non grata by any means. I am getting a little bit of like, I don't know what the politics are there, but why do I care? I should actually not. It doesn't matter.
Well,
because they're mostly bad on Roni. All of the New York housewives are beyond help at this point politically. But why should I care as a viewer?
They have to be beyond help, though, because that's what makes them so watchable. The fact that they are so beyond help
yes.
as a group. We love that.
I hold no one to any standard when it comes to their politics. especially when they're on television. But I need to know more about Ebony. I think I'm going to like her by episode 3, I'm sure.
I like her. She sold me, although, you know, it doesn't take much. She kind of came in there real hot, and I liked it. What do we think of Leah's conversion to Judaism?
I think, I don't know. We'll have to check back in on that one.
She's cuckoo to me. She's cuckoo to me. She's full cuckoo to me now.
To convert to Judaism as a response to your alcohol issues, your sobriety, you know, problems is suspect.
Feels like she might need to join me in logging on to, you know, therapy.com or whatever the fuck.
Therapy.com,
where the therapists are. For therapy.com to think about as a jingle.
Here's someone, we have someone with us this week who, I mean, has really therapized the community for years at this point, wouldn't you say?
I mean, I would say that I became better as a result of the therapy that was getting to know our guest through her performances and, you know, just appearances throughout time. Can I tell you, the guest does not know this. I recently went to Drag and Drive.
Oh my God.
And the guest was the host in LA.
Amazing.
And it was a fucking blast. It was so fun to see live drag again. You don't realize how much you miss it until you see it.
Trust me. And then did you and I go to the season 7 finale party in New York where our guest hosted the event?
Yes, we did.
We saw
Violet do her aerial silks right in front of us.
I think it was the same day that Caitlyn Jenner came out with her cover, right? And it was June of 2014.
I don't know. I wasn't thinking of Caitlyn Jenner that day.
I was thinking of Caitlyn Jenner that day, and it was truly a moment. And then to be able to go to the show and then hear our guests take on it, which I think was truly like the best take. She was like, she's still a shitty person. I think was still the gist of what our guest was saying. And I was
and
like,
she's remained a shitty person to this day. And now she might become the shitty governor of California, which I'd like to revisit my I don't think so, honey, from I believe 2 weeks ago and say, no, absolutely fucking not.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
We're going to need insurrection part 2 if she takes the fucking house. I'm going to be there. I'm taking it out.
You're going to be there.
Queen, and let's just say, for the truly stupid out there, this queen is the winner of Drag Race Season 6, a stand-up comedian legend.
Joan Rivers gave her blessing, I mean, from the get-go. And then
I'm sure we're going to hear about Joan and the culture.
And I had so much fun. I had such a great time acting alongside her in this upcoming Audible original Hot White Heist. Coming out in June.
Do you perform and act?
I perform and act. What about you?
You a thespian? Oh, sometimes. Yes. Here and there. You know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Might be performing a little bit now. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But now they host the podcast, the Bianca Del Rio podcast, which is probably the name of the year. I mean, get straight to it. It lets you know exactly what you're going to get.
You know what you're getting. Well, she's a legend. And we're so excited she's here.
Yeah,
name another
absolutely.
Legend.
Name another legend. You can't. I'm waiting.
I'm waiting. Everyone, welcome.
Bianca Del Rio!
You two are fools. I am cackling at this introduction.
Jester flops. And we learn from the best. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. But, you know, I recently had this whole conversation about the word legend. And it's because of this whole Drag Race world. And there's 92,000 franchises. And everybody's called a legend. And I'm like, they've done nothing. You haven't done a fucking thing.
Kimora Black, legend!
Wait, but you know what? It was because I had just watched that Tina Turner documentary, and I went to Twitter, and I was like, this is amazing, and I was ready to type, you know, she's a legend, but I'm like, that word's not even good enough anymore, because it's been passed around to these two-bit, second-rate drag queens from a fucking reality show.
I know.
You're like, no, she deserves this fucking word. Cher is a legend. Madonna is a legend. Barbara Streisand, not the legend. Fucking cunt that did Drag Race.
Who cares?
That's where I'm at. Yeah.
And then it's like you can't even bump it down to icon because that one's been overused.
Used.
Yeah.
But then do you accept the title when we confer it upon you?
Because I look at it. No. I think that's just I'm old. Yeah. I'm old and I've been around. But you know, in gay life, it's like I'm just grateful to get to work. You know, that's whole my whole thing. So in the end, it's like, no, you're not at that status yet. No.
I mean, you are the best in the biz. I was saying, like, we went to the Drag and Drive, and I was a little unclear on who was performing. It was like, I got tickets, and then I went, and I was, like, so excited. It was you. I was like, oh, my God, I feel safe.
Well, I was excited to get out of my house. So I don't normally do the Voss event shows. I used to work with Brandon Voss, who handles all that years ago. Mm-hmm. And then he was doing Drive and Drag, and he said he's got his group of girls that he always uses. And he's like, you know, we've been using the same girls. Would you mind coming in for a couple of dates? And I was like, I need to get out of my house. Sure, why not? Yeah. So I went, and it was weird because, you know, I was excited to go out to do something. I wasn't so excited to be around other drag queens. But when you go, it's like, I forgot that I'm going to be in a parking lot most of the cities, and people are going to be in vehicles, and I'm just standing on this little platform stage that was built by a lesbian, and I'm thinking to myself, last year I was in Carnegie Hall. This is where I am now. This is what I fucking deserve.
I'm on a, you know, I'm on a tin stage.
This is what it is. I'm done, bitch. Yeah, yard gigs. Fucking yard gigs. That's what I was doing. But it was good. I mean, it was fun to get to do it. It was fun to get out. Again, weird having cars and stuff, but, you know, you adjust. It's like anal. You just adjust. Eventually, you just you're like, what's that bad?
Once you realize it could be way worse.
Trust me. You should have seen some of those cunts I was with backstage. Trust me. I'm like, I'm good. Yeah. Life is good. Yeah.
That was a good group, though. You know who gagged
me?
Who's there? Well, I was going to say, you know who was fucking incredible? Plastique.
She's amazing.
Plastique is like, she's also stunning.
Yes, she is, and she's rotted. Like, she's got a great sense of humor that I didn't expect because I didn't know her before. So I saw her picture, you know, through Instagram and everything. And everybody assumes, since we all did Drag Race, that we all know each other. So I'm looking at her pictures going, I don't like her. And then I meet her, and we are cackling and having a good time. And because she is that stunning in person, I just decided to call her my twin, just because there's nothing better than when somebody's pretty to have somebody ugly go, hey, twin!
Hey,
so
girl.
That's what I was doing the whole time with her, much to her dismay. But yeah, she's beautiful in person. Such a good time. Naomi Smalls is fun. I had a great time with her. So it was fun just to get back out there again, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That was really good. Asia was so good.
Yes.
I will say, Cameron Michaels came out first and was in, like, She-Hulk makeup.
And you said she was unrecognizable.
I was like, we didn't know who the fuck she was. I was like, you could tell from
that there was
some... For the readers at home who can't see me, I'm sort of, you know, like, earthquake back and forth. Like, you know the Cameron Michaels. I always said for my SNL screen test, I was going to do Cameron Michaels. And that's why they didn't put me on, is because they didn't know Cameron. Lauren was like, I don't know. Who did?
I didn't watch season 10.
I skipped this season.
Most people did. Don't worry.
But I was like unclear on who she was, and then I had to get up really close, and COVID restrictions be damned, I was like peering over my mask. I was like, who is that? And I was like, it was Cameron Michaels.
Yeah.
But in a full green She-Hulk getup, because it was superhero themed.
It was a weird scenario because originally we were supposed to do a Christmas show, and that's what I had signed up for in December, and then all of those states like Texas and all that just got really hot with COVID. So they were like, we're not going to go out. So they moved it to, you know, was it February? I believe I did it. I can't remember. Mm. But they said, we're moving it there. And we're doing this superhero theme. And they were like, everybody's going to be a superhero. And I'm like, oh God. And I'm like, I'm, you know, 45 years old. I don't need to be in a leotard. Like, what the fuck? And they said, you know, what would be your superpower? And everybody's like, gorgeousness and fierceness. And I'm like, I'm a cunt. So I was super cunt for the event, you know? That's it. That's what you do. 45 years old in a parking lot in Texas wearing a leotard, making my dad proud. Yeah, making my dad proud.
Wait, can I, of course people know this and they pick up on this from you, especially recently, but you have a special relationship with this word cunt. What does the word cunt mean to you? You just called a bunch of drag queens cunts.
Yeah, I don't even think of it as a bad thing. I mean,
I don't think so either.
At it as just like a gaggle. You know, when a gaggle of fags isn't enough, but like a gaggle of impossible fags at brunch is like a group of cunts. It's just a cunt. You know what I'm talking about? It's nothing sexual. It's just like, oh, there's no reasoning. It's like the gay version of a Karen. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Just annoying little faggots.
You hear that noise and you know exactly what that is.
Cunt.
It's them.
So then when you're super cunt, what is this superhero identity to you?
Well, basically, it's the power to say anything hateful and go, ooh, that's just what I do. It's just easy. You know,
it's Superman's a blessing and a curse.
Yes. Superman saves the world and I just ruin it. So I go, sorry, I'm super cunt. I didn't mean to say that. That was the setup. Yeah.
That is a superpower. But wait, I can't imagine what it was like to do that show. And then, I mean, like, I think we're all used to like Zoom shows, whatever that means, the concept of Zoom shows. and just not hearing the laughter or any sort of feedback. But then were people just honking when they liked to joke?
Well, it depends on where we were. Some cities were very, very serious with restrictions. Now, when we got to Florida and when we got to Texas, they don't give a fuck. I mean, they are, talk about cunts. Florida was the one place where masks and teeth were optional. I mean, that's Florida. So it was tricky when you're there and they were outside of their vehicles. So it was nice to have some people reacting, but in some cities they were actually, you know, following the rules and staying in their vehicles. So the first two nights was wild. But luckily we were doing two shows a night. So, you know, it's always like first show, got through it. Second show, that was kind of fun. Then the next night you're like, okay, we're back on track. So you just had to get adjusted to it, but it was, have you ever done a bad gay pride? Well, whatever, that's redundant, bad gay pride. You know, any gay pride event that you've done where you go and it's in the middle of nowhere and you're in a tent, there's no air conditioning, there's a mirror this big and you're getting
Topeka
paid.
Pride.
Completely. Kalamazoo. It's that type of setup. That's what it felt like the entire time, was like a gay pride event that you couldn't get out of. That's what it felt like.
I don't know if it's because of COVID and it's because I miss traveling. It was, Matt and I did one little fun, it wasn't little, it was a big tour, but then that was it. And then we, and then, you know, shit got crazy. But then I miss, in some ways, I felt like it was more meaningful to do a queer gay thing in a town that like maybe didn't always have these events for people to rally around.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm asking such an earnest question, but like, did you ever get that feeling that like going to the small town pride events felt kind of fun at least?
Oh God, no, I love the travel. I'll do anything. I'm not picky. I mean, I'm doing this podcast. So the thing is, it's just the way that it is. It's like, I love going and doing it. And I like it when it's a bad situation. Like everything can't be perfect. Like I was saying earlier, is that in 2019, I got to do Carnegie Hall, but then the next night, this is just goes to show you, you're in Carnegie Hall, you live in your little fantasy. I got on my bus the next morning and we drove to, I think it was Pennsylvania. Or Philly, I can't remember which one it was. But we go there, and I'm in another venue, and this is a rock venue that I'm now in. Folding chairs, the stage is too high, the air conditioner's broke, there is no dressing room. That's the next night. And I'm like, you know what? That's what I fucking deserve.
Just to let you know.
This is it. Just to remind you that's what you come from. So I love the whole magic of it. So I'll do anything. I'll go to any of these events or anywhere I'm at. And that's what was so great about Drive and Drag, is also just the commitment to people coming out to see it, you know, driving into this setup. They're just like, we need entertainment too. So it was actually fun.
Yeah, there go. It's so funny, like, to talk about like how every state is different. It was truly like, it was like the heart of the pandemic. And my sister sent me a message, and it was a video message of her. And she lives in St. Petersburg, Florida. Okay. So she was out, and it was a video of literally, truly, she was in the front row at a Kennedy Davenport show. Kennedy's just doing three flips in front of her. I was like, oh my God. I texted back, oh my God, amazing. What the fuck? Like, I'm like batting down the hatches here. I'm like, she can't possibly have a mask on there unless that was a reveal. Like,
no.
Where's your mask? It's so crazy.
Florida don't care. You
she
know that by the way they vote.
Safe.
No, they all say that. Yeah. I just had that conversation with some fag the other day. I was in New York, and this queen, I was like, hey, and she didn't have a mask on. And I was just like standing outside, basically in the bike lane in a hut, eating with other friends. That's what it is in Ninth Avenue. And she came over and she was just like, hey, I'm like, why don't you put your mask on just so people around don't freak out? And she's like, I'm vaccinated, honey. I'm like, well, that's the next layer now. So it's kind of like, are you a top?
Yeah.
Are you a bottom? Are you single? Are you on PrEP? What type of vaccination did you get? It's like, girl, it's too much.
There's too much business to get out of, on the front end. Just
completely.
Like, okay, is it okay that we're having this conversation?
Right.
Wait, I was going to ask, what's your like, what's your mode when you come into New York now? I mean, or even back when you were doing Carnegie Hall a couple years ago, like you come in, you like stay with friends. You're a New York girl.
Well, no, I had a great, many, many years there. And the problem was, it's just that once I did Drag Race, I started traveling quite a bit. And like I said, I was taking every shitty gay pride. So I was in and out of the city, and it just became problematic to get in and out of New York. And I was in a, you know, in a studio apartment in Hell's Kitchen. And it was just to the point where I was like, all right, either I move someplace in New York or I get the fuck out. And in New York, I didn't want to live in Queens. I didn't want to live in Brooklyn. You know, it just didn't seem to make sense. We came to LA. And it was like, okay, there's sunshine all the time. No, my gigs wouldn't get canceled because of snow, or I couldn't get out of LaGuardia. Sure. So I was like, let me just try this for a while. And I was stuck in LA for about 4 years, and now I'm in Palm Springs. So yeah.
So we were talking about Palm Springs before we got on, because we all love. So you live there now?
I live there, live there. Yeah. So the crazy shit was, so I was in London doing this musical. Everybody's Talking About Jamie. And I was finishing it up in the end of February, early March, I believe. And I was coming home, and I had 8 weeks off to get my tonsils out. And to buy a house. I know, random. Oh, I know, 45 years old. Get
the tumbled. Schedule.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, this is great timing to make this happen. I got there. I came out to Palm Springs because my assistant lived here already. Came out here. I saw a house. I came in here on a Wednesday, saw a house on a Friday, and I had it by Monday. And it was just like, bam, boom. And I'm like, okay, now I'm going to get tonsils. And then boom, we were in lockdown. So I was in a house that I had just bought with no furniture, no, absolutely nothing, sitting in Palm Springs, the beginning of the entire pandemic.
Yeah. Tonsils still in.
Tonsils still in because we canceled the surgery.
So we got we're talking elective. To you with the bad tonsils right now.
Yeah, I'm good now because it's fucking hot here. But when I get into cold air, that's the problem. So
that's when it's rough.
Yeah. So they were like, it's elective surgery. We'll reschedule you until you know it's later.
Did they drive you into LA for those days that we were working together?
Yes.
They did. Oh my god, I felt so bad. I was like, they're like, Bianca's about to touch down into the studio in LA. And I was like, and she drove all, like, they drove her all the way from Palm Springs.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a big deal just to go from here to there. It's not that bad.
I feel like it's still such a drive, though. I mean,
if you hit traffic, you're looking at a 3 hour moment.
Yeah,
but if you come at the right time, you can actually get in and out of there in an hour and a half if you come in the right time.
Isn't that words to live by? If you come at the right time.
If you come at the right time, title of that.
Honey. Yeah.
Yeah, but I always feel like Palm Springs, whenever I'm there, I'm always so happy to be there for like 3 days. And then the fourth, fifth day, did you have like a period where you hit a wall where you were like, okay, it's Palm Springs all the time? Like, are you loving it?
Well, no, because I'm not in the direct city. I'm a little further out, which is great. So I'm a little more residential. I'm in this super Republican neighborhood, which is weird because I'm the darkest thing without a lawnmower. But it is one of these areas where you're out here. So I'm not in the middle of the Airbnbs and all the gays having their moments. So I know where that is, which is about 15 minutes away. So if I need it, I can go find it. But I'm a little further out. So I like being alone. You know, I get sick of people quickly. So it was easy to just kind of go, this is nice. This is cool. I could set up my house and be a normal person for a while.
Mm-hmm. There you go. There you go.
And drink, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Are you gigging out there? Because there's like, no. No, you're just like,
no, I haven't. No, my friends, a lot of my friends that are from LA that have come out, that have done Drag Race, that will come out and do the brunches and stuff. But I have this weird contract with a production company that I can't do shit, which is great because now the world's opening back up again. And so things are slowly becoming human and normal.
Yes.
Okay. And you're going to get the bookings in line pretty soon.
Well, yeah. Well, I have a tour that's announcing soon that I'll be back on the road with. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There are actually two announcements that are happening next week. So, yeah.
Okay, we'll keep her in the ground.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
The pre-exclusive.
Yeah, the pre-exclusive. Yes, that's it. I don't know when this is airing. The announcement of the announcement.
We love it.
I just bitched about that online. Drag queens love to do that. They go, big event coming up tomorrow. Oh, I can't wait to share. Just fucking tell us, cunt.
Tell us
this 3 days before. Just tell us when it's about to happen. It's annoying. Wow.
The pre-exclusive is just a little bit thinner than the exclusive when it comes out, you know?
It's a taste. It's a taste.
And then the exclusive better not flop. I better not hear, like, about your new fucking podcast.
No, I'm not doing it. No. The crazy thing was, you know, they were up my ass, Starburst Audio, for about 4 years asking me to do one. And I did, at the time. Well, I just thought you had to be in one place and record it. I mean, that's how it was, you know, the world. I think you'd had to be one place and do it, and I couldn't commit. But then after, 9 months and you know, staying locked at home, I just thought, well, fuck, I need to do something. So then it was just easier. And basically, this is how we function with everybody now. It's kind of wild.
I know.
Right.
There is no boundary between, like, my, like, podcast behavior, like, the way I'll, like, sort of, like, talk to someone here. It's all blended together in a way that's kind of terrifying.
Yes.
I feel like I'm just on a podcast with everybody I'm on Zoom with.
And now you're going to have to go back into society. This is going to be tricky.
Terrible.
No.
Terrible.
You're like, wait, hold on. Is this one being recorded? Like, no, this is a private meeting.
is my QuickTime running? It's terrible. Yeah. But wait, Matt earlier was saying when you guys were talking about Palm Springs that, like, it's like Matt hopes to end up. I mean, I think we all kind of do.
I see myself men. When I go to the when I go to Tropicana or Tropical, I'm always like, this is me at the bar.
Yeah.
This is, I know it. And it's me very soon. And I love it.
No, I think what's great about it is it's just, I mean, I come from originally from New Orleans. So it's like, it's completely the opposite. We don't have mountains down there. I mean, we're below sea level.
Right.
Not to mention, it's just, it's always sunny. The weather's always the same. It's very consistent, which is good. It's not as bad as or hot to me as Phoenix. And you know, everything looks pretty. Everything's like the Flintstones. So I just love the whole idea of it. You know, it works.
It
for
is
me.
It is bedrock. It is all bedrock.
Completely.
The town. I'm just like in a charming way.
Yes.
In a way that is not terribly haunting to me. In the way that like, oh, it's mid-century, like whatever. I'm like, no, it's nice. It's I see myself there too. But I feel like when you're in LA, it's just the proximity is like. It calls to you in a different way. And I think Matt's experiencing that right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, to be honest, the only reason, I mean, one of the main reasons why I moved out here is so I could actually appear young. So it's great when you look at the people that are here. I'm like, I'm chicken here. This is scary. This is like a whole new world for me. Yeah.
But you have nary a crow's foot on your face, Bianca. You're
looking
youthful
fresh.
Looking.
Well, I just had this laser done. This lady just burned the shit out of me. She was like, all right, you got some dark spots on your face. We're going to zap it. Then she zapped it and it got darker. I don't know what the fuck. But,
what?
No, well, I mean, you know, I've had Botox for Christ's sake. Yeah, you got to do that every now and
but
then. Yeah.
We're all, how often? Because I think this is as I'm pointing at your face saying that this is my goal. In like 5 years.
Well, it's I don't do it that often. Like every 6 months, and the doctor does it in different spots, so he doesn't do the same spots always. So if he does here, he won't do there, and then he'll do that next time. So you still have some mobility. So you don't have that Nicole Kidman forehead yet. Yeah, you know what I mean. That you know. What you've seen? Are you?
Now,
tell me your friends with her.
She's not a close friend as of yet.
I was gonna say.
But I was like, I was watching The Undoing, and a couple of my friends are like, "Ugh, I wish she didn't have so much work." And I'm like, "No, she's playing like an Upper East Side rich woman. It's like Nicole Kidman is playing a version of herself on The Undoing. I'm cool with it."
A rich
and
white
that woman
yeah.
also might have a slight Australian accent. You don't know. You don't know where she went to university.
I am excited to see her though. Excited / interested in this whole Lucy biopic thing that's happening. Did you hear about that?
We did. Oh, I mean, yeah. I've seen the photo, and that people are a little up in arms about the photo, right?
Yes, because
it's
happening
a lot to be up in arms about.
It's her face in an orange wig, and everybody's like, you know, that's. I think the headline was something ridiculous at one of those Daily Mail things that was like, she's the spitting image of Lucy, and it's like. Girl, you know, but then
it's okay. We can say,
right. Yeah. I mean, she's not going to win Snatch Game, but it's in that thing where you're like, and then they're like justifying it by going, it's not Lucy. I Love Lucy. It's Lucille Ball's life. So I'm curious just to see what it's about. Yeah.
She's such an amazing actress that like, I'll be interested in what the take is. I will say it was originally supposed to be Cate Blanchett. And I think that would have been fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like that. I just think energy wise, because you know, Lucy, like, or Lucille Ball, rather, like, she was a rather, like, hard person. You know what I mean? Like, she was, like, a tough woman. She was a tough businesswoman. She took no shit. Like, as funny and as, like, you know, broad as she was on the show, she was a real tough one. And I think that, you know, Cate Blanchett, like, has that, like, natural toughness and take no shit, which she brought to, you know, The Aviator. And she's just, we've seen her do so many times that I was really excited about that. And I think Nicole can find it and get there. And I never bet against Nicole. But in terms of just pure casting, I will say I was excited for the Cate Blanchett Lucy moment.
See, I'm still upset that Kate didn't win the Academy Award for Elizabeth and they gave it to Gwyneth Paltrow that year. Remember that shit? It was for that Shakespeare book. Like, that fuckery. Like, come on. Like, you know good and goddamn well. But she did win for The Aviator, which was supporting, but whatever. Yeah. I do love her.
I mean, now she's also got her Blue Jasmine one. So she's got a couple on her damn shelf. But the thing about someone like that is it's like, you know, they always deserve to win. Did you all hear about the Hollywood Foreign Press falling apart?
No.
What's going on? Yeah, fill us in because I haven't been keeping up with this.
So basically, like, they've obviously come under fire because there's almost no diversity in their voting body, which is essentially 88 like European men who, like, named Geppetto and like that like all vote. basically you can send them like a basket of cookies and they'll vote for you, and that's like just basically essentially how the Golden Globes works. Wait, like it's like these crazy European guys that are like, hey, and they're like the way that they vote is actually a little bit sexist, and apparently like there's someone came out, I believe it was Scarlett Johansson, actually said today, she made a huge statement, and she said, you know, I am not going to be participating in these in the Hollywood foreign press events going forward, because every time I go to like press events with them, they ask very sexist questions. Mm. You know, their platform for diversity outreach going forward is not satisfactory. And so now everyone like is sort of getting on board with being like, we're pulling out. Like Netflix announced, like, we're not doing any Hollywood foreign
press
stuff.
NBC's not going to broadcast it.
They're not going to broadcast it. Yeah.
Wow.
So they came under fire, then they responded to it. The response wasn't good enough. More people are coming out to the point where, this to me is hilarious, Tom Cruise went to the Hollywood Foreign Press offices and returned his 3 Golden Globes in protest. So now people are like, damning Tom Cruise.
Queen.
And I'm like, yeah. No, she's the worst.
Stunt queen.
But I was like, yeah, Tom Cruise brought his Golden Globes to the Hollywood Foreign Press offices. Then he said, do better, hopped on the back of a Sea Org member, went back to the Scientology Celebrity Center and threw darts at a woman who looked at Ann Archer wrong in the hallway. Give me a fucking break.
Wait a minute. First of all, let's talk about the big problem here. Why does Tom Cruise have 3 Golden Globes? That's what I want to know. What the fuck has he done that he's got
what are you
three,
for, Rock of Ages?
Yeah, what are these wins?
It's like the new seasons of Drag Race. Who cares? It's not special anymore. You gave it to her. What does it matter?
Okay, it's Magnolia, so Jerry Maguire, and Born on the 4th of July, in case anyone's wondering. Oh. Those are the wins.
I mean, let's just dissect his career.
Yeah.
the moment of Jerry Maguire is Renee Zellweger. She is the moment. Okay. Uh-huh. She said,
It's
the late Kelly Preston. Oh,
Yeah.
Getting fucked by him.
This is getting.
Don't ever stop fucking me!
What an incredible read.
That was good.
See,
thank you.
That was really good. Sketch legend for your consideration. We have for your consideration Emmys this year.
FYC,
but yeah,
right
it's gonna
here,
happen.
Wow,
FYC baby. Where the buzz is building. But wait, no, it's so funny to me though that people like occasionally he'll come out and be like, hey, yeah, I want to say that I'm on the right side of one thing, and then people are like, yeah, we stan, and I'm like, no, he is a leader of a cult.
Big time.
Stop. But,
you know, have you ever seen Scarlett Johansson in person? She is the tiniest little thing, biggest tits I've ever seen on such a small frame. She's very small. I have a picture with her. I'll have to send it to you. She's literally like this tiny little thing, huge tits. Beautiful, though. Very beautiful.
She's va-va-voom. I can't wait for Black Widow. Look, I'm looking to get back into the movie theater. I went the other night to see Together, starring our friend Patty Harrison. She was fabulous. I'm just like, it feels good to be back in the movie theater again. They're like half full, so it's not exciting. But and any of these big movies, I want to go see.
But that's the best capacity. 50% capacity at a theater is the best. Even in the before, like it was like, oh great, it was like a Thursday afternoon thing that you would do, and it'd be like, this is perfect.
Uh-huh. Pick your seat.
There you go. What's the theater in Palm Springs?
You know, I have no idea, because when I got here, everything was closed. So things are just slowly now opening up. So I haven't done my research. Yeah, I know nothing.
And so you're discovering it for
I am discovering
time.
It now. Yeah, I went to my friends Jackie Beat and Sherry Vine had drag shows at this place called Oscars downtown. So I went to go.
Are they legends?
They're legends. Okay. Because they, you know, they've been. I would call them legends, because this is what I would say about anybody like Lady Bunny and Coco Peru and Varla Jean Merman and all of those queens. Oh, these are bitches. Mm-hmm. Who started, you know, in the early 90s and that are still working and didn't have the platform of Drag Race, didn't have social media. So the fact that they're still around, still doing what they do, and they're still fucking funny as shit. They're bitter as hell, but they're funny as shit, that it's great. I would call them legends because they're committed. And also, they're a huge reminder to me to say, stop drag. So I know at some point I'm going to go, I don't want to be her. So I will stop. But yeah, it's wild because they've been around. I mean, can you imagine just doing this since the 90s? I mean, that's a commitment, bitch. No.
Mm-mm. And you really do forget, like, you know, now, because now it feels like when we do the new seasons of Drag Race, almost everyone that's on the show now, like, started doing drag or came of age doing drag while the show was on.
Yes.
So there is, like, that, while I still really love the show, and I actually thought season 13 was, like, an incredibly strong season.
I enjoyed it.
In the grand scheme.
Bianca's making a face.
No, it was so long.
It was.
But I get it. But what the fuck else are we doing? You know what I mean? Anytime that anyone else, anyone's saying like it was long, I was like, I was grateful for it. Now, okay. I will say this. I haven't started watching Australia because I am a little fatigued at this point.
I haven't. No, fatigued. I haven't watched it. Yeah. Well, I haven't watched since my season. And it's wild because like I literally watched the season six in a bar doing bar viewings. As I told you, I'll do anything. So I was doing bar viewings while it was airing in TV, and I have not sat back and watched any of it since then.
Right.
So, and then after that, I was traveling, and then it started getting really complicated when it started going to specific channels that weren't in my hotel or wherever I was traveling at. Like, then it went to VH1 and it switched from Logo, and then it was all.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care anymore. You know, I can't keep up. You know, it's
challenging. Did you at least watch Bob's season?
I did watch Bob's season. I saw a marathon of Bob's season, but I did know what was going on because Bob and I are friends. So it was that kind of a thing where, you know, he was eight. So I was out working, but we kept in touch and I knew what was going on. But I think that was probably the last time that I cared was eight. Yeah,
fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah,
I mean, but hearing you talk about, you know, Jackie and just Coco and Lady Bunny, I'm just like, oh, but see, Bianca's win was great. Even like in my like, you know, zygote era of being in New York City, I was like being like a baby. I was just like, oh, but it feels like Bianca has this connection with like, I hate to use this term, but like that old school of drag.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I mean, when we started drag, I mean, that's how it was. I mean, I started in 96. And so the thing was that you had to have a gimmick. You had to have something you were doing. Mm-hmm. So either you were this super perfect lip sync artist, or you were the dancing queen, or you were the trans goddess that would be, you know, naked with the capes and all this stuff, or you were the clown. And that's kind of how it started for me. And I didn't consider myself a clown. They told me I was a clown. And in that situation is just how it rolled. So I would basically cover the time while the girls were doing costume changes to talk to the audience because no one else wanted to talk to the audience. So that's kind of how it evolved. And when you're dealing with drunk people at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday night in New Orleans, girl.
Yeah.
That's the bottom of the barrel. So
the trial by fire that is. Yeah.
Ooh, challenging. But, you know, it was what it was. So that's just what I did all those years. And then it just kind of went into. And so Drag Race for me, I did it at 37. I had a birthday while we were filming. So I was 37 and I thought I would quit drag at 40. You know, I'm sick of schlepping from bar to bar and doing shitty pride gigs. I thought, all right, I could wrap this up and just live a normal life. And then Drag Race kind of changed everything. So it was a last minute chance of like, let's go do it, see what's going to happen. Because I'd seen many of my untalented friends go far, like Manila. And I thought, well, I could do this. You know, like people know Jiggly's name. What the fuck? I could go do something. Yeah.
While we're talking Days of Lore, we should ask the question, Bowen, what do you think? The central question of the show, Las Culturistas, that we currently are actually participating in right now.
I think we should. You should ask.
It's time. The question is, Bianca, what was the culture that made you say culture is for me? So basically, this was the pop culture that entered your life at a certain point when you were like, oh, wait, I see myself in this. I am affected by this. I'm going to follow this impulse.
Oh, well, it's tricky because it wasn't actually happening in real life at my time, but it was through videotapes and a friend of mine, a guy that worked for the local newspaper back in the day in New Orleans. I just started drag and he says, I need you to watch this videotape. It's important. And I got to watch a videotape of Charles Pierce. And Charles Pierce was this amazing drag queen from way back when. And it was the moment that I went, oh, this is what it was. He wasn't pretty. He was doing impressions, but it was his take on the impression. So it's very much like Saturday Night Live in that moment where visually you have some of the stuff that gives you the nuances, but it was the culture in the world that it was like, oh, so it's not all about looking like a woman. Oh, it's not all about being serious. That I went, oh, that's for me. And then I think the other side of it was, you know, just I was in the Madonna age, you know, so that was like my culture and my life that I was like, oh, God, I want to be in music videos. I want to be, you know, I want to wear that ponytail, you know, and sing Vogue. That was my thing. And I still love her, even though she's kind of crazy now. But I'm like, you know, I'm not mad at her. But yeah, that would probably be the most interesting thing that took me over. Yeah.
Charles Pierce, okay, she's doing like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, yep. like as like Betty Davis. I mean, yep. like that, she has that like Betty Davis face.
Yes, but he also was a huge character actor. So he was I'm like sorry. On yeah. Love. Well, yeah, I mean, in that day, he was one. Also, Jim Bailey was another one. Jim Bailey used to impersonate Judy Garland and do a full concert as Judy uh-huh. Garland. I mean, like made his uh-huh. living. He was on the Carol Burnett Show, was on Johnny Carson. And the same thing with Charles Pierce. He was a brilliant character actor. So he was on Love Boat, Fantasy Island. He was on everything in the 70s, and you can find him. But he was just one of those people that actually made a living as a drag queen. And I yeah. thought, oh, wow. You know, that's cool. I think I want to do that.
Like around the same time as like a Divine even? Or I'm having trouble like
yes, it would
the
be. With like two different spectrums. I think, sure. perfect example. Charles Pierce was good friends with Bea Arthur, if that gives you any. Bea Arthur yeah. gave his eulogy. So that's the kind of queen he was. But I think he probably, well, he could be the same age as Divine. I can't remember. But it was also, you know, starting out back then where you didn't have female names, starting out right. when you couldn't dress in drag. I mean, there was a time even in New Orleans that you would get arrested if you were in drag, which is kind of crazy. They put you in a paddy wagon, girl, take you to jail mm-hmm. for wearing heels. So it was a different time. But I was just shocked by these people that basically made careers out of this and were just brilliantly talented.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to a YouTube hole, you got to look up Charles Pierce. You'll be cackling. There's one called Charles Pierce in San Francisco, which was hysterical. You got to look at it.
See, I mean, are you a little disappointed in us that we're not as familiar?
No.
Most of the time we have some awareness around our guests' answers.
Yeah, I don't care. No, I'm educating you.
It's true. The children don't know. Sometimes the children have forgotten. Sometimes the children just don't know.
No, and I just think it's just for me, it was just my gay culture. And then I knew all of these older, you know, drag queens that I worked with throughout the years, that some of them, they gave me the best advice, you know, throughout the years. So I just appreciate, that's why I'm friends with the old girls. Like, you know, I mean, they're not much older than me. They're about 10 years older, but you know, Sherry, Jackie, Varla, Coco, and all of them, it's like, they've kind of welcomed me into that world, but they're the best. They don't play any games. They deliver. And I mean, you go see any of their shows and you come out of there cackling, which is nice.
Yeah. They're drag queens. Which I like. And it feels like that's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's like, You're not supposed to give a fuck what is happening outside, except in that moment. Did you know Rue at all before doing the show? Like, were you connected to Rue at all?
No, not at all. I think my only connection with Rue, it was in 1993 or two. I can't remember. It might have been 1992. I was still in high school. I had a friend that was an actress, and she was introducing at this. It was a No AIDS Task Force event that was happening in New Orleans. It was a big, I think, Halloween party, and it was the height of Supermodel. And so Rue was coming in. And so I was there and got to see Rue. And, you know, it was just this big entourage came in, big blonde hair. But also at that time, nobody was doing it like Rue, you know? So Rue was on TV and had all this exposure. But that was the first run-in. And then in New York, occasionally I would see her either on the street or at Splash Bar when I worked there with Bunny, that she
you
came
worked
in.
At Splash.
Worked at Splash. Oh, girl. So that's where I run into her a couple of times. That was all pre-Drag Race. So it wasn't until we did the show that, you know, I got to, well, I'm not even sure if it was her. It was probably a hologram. But she was in the room with me during that time. Yeah.
Right. I recently actually fell down a wormhole of like it's so funny because like just think of the RuPaul supermodel moment as this moment that happened and that was what catapulted Ru. But what I constantly forget is that it was directly connected to the fact that like that was also the dawn of the age of the supermodel.
Yes.
And the other day I was like, I've fallen down a wormhole of like, I guess what they call the big six, which is, you know, Naomi, Christy Turlington, Linda Evangelista, I guess Kate Moss, Cindy Crawford, and like, I don't want to forget.
Naomi Campbell. Did we say Naomi?
I said Naomi, and was it Claudia Schiffer? Maybe it was Claudia Schiffer.
Claudia Schiffer, guest model. Yeah.
So, and then like Tyra Banks would come a little bit after that.
I'm over here saying Carla Bruni like an idiot.
Well, I guess like, and I remember like there was like I guess Rue was on Watch What Happens Live with Naomi, and they were Andy asked about the song Supermodel, and Naomi she lit up because she was like, we love that so much. And I think like I sometimes forget that moment for Rue was probably so huge because the supermodels were so huge. Like nowadays it's like they try to make some of these girls happen in terms of being supermodels. Like I guess we know their names, like we know who Gigi Hadid is. We know that Kendall Jenner does walk the runway.
Yeah.
But like at the time, like that was such a huge moment. And then for that song to be connected to that huge moment pop culturally, that's what made Rue sort of explode, right?
Like, and they also even opened, remember the Fashion Cafe, which was like a Planet Hollywood gay version that they had? They had it in New York. They had one in New Orleans and I think one in Los Angeles. Wow. So it was like they were investing this restaurant that was based all around supermodels, which is wow. insane to think about. Yeah. The '90s.
Yeah. Fashion and I was reading because I was sort of trying to educate myself about this because I was like, you know, there's really not a lot of supermodels now. And it was basically about how those five or six women became so powerful in the fashion industry that basically fashion couldn't go without them. So yeah. They basically made a decision as an industry that we were never going to let six women become this powerful because like we couldn't, they couldn't do
control
anything.
It. Yeah. That's
yeah.
what you mean.
Yeah. Like the I only get out of bed for $10,000 was not a joke.
That's a good one. You know what's funny? One time I was in New York and I ran into Linda Evangelista at Party City. She was buying a costume. I swear to God. No. Do you do this? I don't know if either one of you do this, Bowen and Matt, but like when you go, especially like in New York, it's that type of thing where your eyes are always open to see mm-hmm. if you know somebody. I'm one of
yeah.
those.
Oh, yeah.
Out
yeah.
of my groups of friends, I'm the one who spots the person first. So I was going up and down the aisle. I was in the luau section. And there she was, but she was standing there. And I'm like, you know, that moment when you're like, oh my God, that looks like Linda Evangelista. This is happening in my head going, woman looks a lot like Linda Evangelista. Not like that is, that woman could be if she had a little more makeup, if her hair was this, if,
and this
was
wasn't a Party City. Like, I know right, she can't right. be here.
You know, it's New York. It's New York. Like, yeah. I always say there's a select few of phantom people that you would never see in person. Princess Diana, right. Michael Jackson. Well, maybe because they're dead. But Princess Diana, Michael Jackson, Madonna, you wouldn't see locally. You would run sure, into right. Liza. You would run into you know, anybody on the street that you would go, oh, hey. You know, Joan Rivers was one. Cindy Adams. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff you expect to see. But you wouldn't expect to see Linda Evangelista in Party City. So I was shocked. I told her hello. And she just looked at me like I was fucking crazy. And that was that. Yeah.
Which how are you positive that it was her, though?
Because I said to her, I was like, oh, my God, oh. I'm sorry. You look a lot like Linda Evangelista. She goes, my name's Linda. And I go, oh, nice to meet you. I love you. And I just went away. I was like, ooh, you know, you become that faggot, you know, where you're like, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. One time I was in Central Park and I was walking with my friend and we saw Kevin Bacon walking his dog.
Oh.
And as he was walking by with his dog, she told me, she says, we're going to play it cool. We're not going to say anything. I said, of course not. He's walking his dog. That's what it is. And as soon as he passes, my friend screams, well, I left you in Footloose. And I was like, oh, what a fucking troll. Like that girl.
Yeah. So, and also one he hasn't heard before. Jesus.
Exactly. But he waved and kept moving. But, you know.
What's your MO when people do that to you, though?
I don't mind it. I don't mind. I'm happy if they even give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
I like it when it's a surprise one. So it's like if you're going through TSA and you're standing there and you've put this and they've pulled your bag aside and you're like, I know. Because when you're traveling a lot, you're like, there ain't no water in there. There ain't no gun. Yeah, look, what the fuck is up? And they pull the bag over and then you go over there and I'm like, this is going to be another 10 minutes. I can't sit in the lounge. And it's somebody going, hey, Bianca. And I'm like, hey, she goes, you were my favorite. I just want to tell you hello. I'm like, can I get my bag back? So yeah, those moments are fun.
They hold your bag just to say hi to you?
Yeah, she was telling me hi. She was just wiping my bag down, telling me hello, that I was her favorite. I was like, that's sweet.
I couldn't give this back to you until I said. It's like, well, you have to give it back to me.
Yeah, but you wouldn't expect it. So it's that kind of stuff that's fun. A flight attendant, somebody at Starbucks that writes your name on the cup before you even see it. And then it's like, you get it. And it's like Bianca with a heart. And you're like, oh, this is fucking dumb. But it is kind of wild. It is kind of wild because you know when you go and film that stuff, you just don't know. Like in my head, I thought maybe my friends in New York would watch, my people I know in Los Angeles and people in New Orleans. I didn't expect for everybody in different countries to watch globally to know or care. Yeah.
Your season was a sea change, though. I really think that, you know, because so 4 and 5, like, really put it on the map. And then I really do believe, like, everyone in the queer community, well, I put everyone in quotes, but, like, everyone, all my friends were watching by season 6. I think even season 6 was maybe the first season that I was like, okay, I knew I liked the show since season 2, but it wasn't my favorite show until season 6. And
agree.
Then I think it was, like, around 6, 7, 8, and then I believe by the time season 9 was happening, it was like a full-blown phenomenon. But your season was really the season where it started to change.
I think it was good casting. I think it was just that they allowed...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we were all... Like, Courtney Act was extremely established, you know, globally working and doing stuff, and she was in well, she's late 20s and 30s. And Adore was huge on the American Idol there. And I mean, I was 37, so they allowed older. Darianne was older than me. So it was there was a lot of diversity in age and also experience, which was great.
Yeah.
And you know, down to the final four, we were all completely different as people and not necessarily in competition with one another. So it's not like, I think now it's hard for me to watch because there's, you know, these little Instagram girls where they look gorgeous in a photo, but I go, what do you do? Like, what are you? You know?
Yeah. I mean, you've heard this a million times, but it does feel like six was the last season before things started to tip into Instagram appealing.
Yeah.
And before things started to be done on the show with the like foresight of like, what's it going to look like on Insta?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Six was sort of that last little moment that we all sort of hold dear that I remember being like, okay, there's something changing with seven once it came on. And I was like, oh, I long for the days of season six. Like, I heard myself saying that.
Well, I didn't even have Instagram or Twitter until I did the show. So it was that kind of a thing where they were like, well, it'd be best if you maybe get online and create a social profile. And I'm like, okay.
So it was something that they suggested you do.
They suggested to us, we didn't have, and it's tricky now because, you know, it's a completely different world as far as the contracts are concerned and the media size of it with VH1 being involved. So even once you film the show, VH1 and all of them will sit with you separately and then go through their propaganda fuckery and things that you're expected and things you have to do. It's kind of like appearances as Miss America, you know? I didn't have any of that. It was literally like, you do the show. We were paid $500 an episode. That's what it was. It was 2 days for every episode, except for our Rusical, which took 3 days. And that was that. Contract was show up at the finale and we're happy. Thank you so much. And then I got my money and that was that. So I didn't have any restrictions. I was not signed to them or any of that madness. So it's a completely different game. I think the same thing kind of happened with American Idol, where it was free for all for a hot minute. And then they started controlling and handling all the girls, which is the situation they're in now. So, you know, good luck. I mean, glad I did it when I did it. But it's a different world. And I think as the show has gotten bigger, you know, the rules have changed and the demographic has changed, you know, so it can be challenging. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. I'm grateful for the platform. But I also refuse to have a 13-year-old girl named Bethany tell me how the fuck I should live my life or what I should say or shouldn't say because she doesn't like it. No.
That is the that's got to be the tough thing is it's like, you know, someone like Tina Burner, who's like an established queen for decades in New York. And then she goes on and like the fucking 12-year-old fandom is like, we don't like it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who the fuck are you? Like, she's been doing it longer than you've been alive. And that's not a joke. She literally might have shoes older than these kids.
Completely. But it's also the chance you take. It's the chance you take. And, you know, I'm friends with Tina and Tina. All she ever wanted was to be on the show. And I think that's also the hard thing, too, is that when you want it so bad and you've always wanted to be on, I think she auditioned like 10 times where it was like every season. So she finally gets on and it's a gamble. You know, you just never know how people are going to react.
But it's just, I mean, it has nothing to do with Tina as a person or the way she comes off on television. And it has everything to do with the way that audiences expect to be expect to dictate the conversation or they're the ones interpreting what's happening on their televisions in a way that's supposed to like materially affect these girls' lives. It's like, this affects their bookings. This affects like the way that people approach them. I mean, like,
I think for me in particular, I was grateful that I didn't have social media all those years before because I didn't know how social media worked. I didn't know that well, first of all, I don't play the victim. I don't care what you think of me. And so in this game, I don't use social media as a platform to even discuss anything personal or get into it.
Sure.
Whereas Drag Race, you know, the storytelling and the fuckery and I was left at a bus stop and I overcame the, who cares? Sing a song, dance, blow up balloons, make it entertaining. No one is going to go, let me go see her show because she was left at a bus stop. Like, what the fuck? Like, and I love Roxy. Roxy and I are friends and Roxy's a very talented performer. And what I hate is all people know is she was left at a bus stop. Like that, that's the label that's there. And I mean, I went to dinner with her and she annoyed the shit out of me. And I mean, I left her at the restaurant, but it's the same thing where you just go, like I always tell people, her family left at the bus stop. Have you sat at dinner with her? I left her there. Like, bye. But she's got a good sense of humor. But it's a tricky situation with it because if you start to believe it and it just becomes your world, they get wrapped up in it. And then the girls get desperate. And now it's like oversaturation. So it's really hard. Everybody's trying to get ahead and everybody's trying to stay afloat. You know, like season, was it season 11 that happened during pandemic or 12?
12, yeah.
So 12 came out during the pandemic, and that was the cherry pie of it all.
Okay,
which
there
was,
you go.
So it was like fuckery on fuckery.
Right.
And I felt so bad for that season of Girls. And then this season was when they shot it in during COVID when they figured it out, yeah.
So it's a lot of people out there. So everybody's trying to grasp and get that limelight. And it's very, very challenging to do it, especially when you get wrapped up in the fuckery of online. Yeah.
I mean, but now I'm just realizing, and I've kind of known this the whole time, but it's like your time on the show was never, you had never given the producers any crumb of like a personal narrative, which I probably made your sort of like your season in terms of your win so clean in terms of it being just about the work. And it was just like, yes, of course Bianca deserves it because it's Bianca and she was so solid all season.
It was tricky. That's one of the reasons why I didn't think I was going to win. You know, as you're going through it, you know, remember, we're doing this over a 5.5 week period. Every day is, you know, we're doing it. So we don't have all this space. So every 2 days is one episode. So all I kept thinking was, let's just get through, You do confessionals every day. So that's a whole separate team. So basically the show itself, you come in the morning, we walk in, you know, our headphones, our bag. She gives us our challenge. We start this challenge. The next day is ruin drag, runway, all of that. But each day when it ends, a different production team comes in and we do basically the untucked and our confessionals. So we get into our one outfit. We were the first season they started doing that. So if you had on a shirt in episode one, you had to wear that shirt every day for confessionals.
Right.
Yeah. So they could use the footage as they chose. And, you know, you would just sit back with this producer and they would ask you questions about the day and you would respond. And my responses were always just like, well, this is what I thought. This is what I thought. And there was a moment, I remember they had an issue with Ben De La Creme. She was going on with some sob story in the corner and I didn't hear it. I didn't hear the sob story. So they were like, well, what did you feel about Ben De La Creme's story? I said, I didn't hear it. And they said, well, we need to get something from you. I go, I didn't hear it. And they go, well, you know, she had family members. I go, I didn't fucking hear it. I don't know. I don't care about her or her family. They're like, we can't use that. I go, then quit asking. But it was that kind of a thing where if you back down, then you probably made up some bullshit that would have stirred up a fight. But I was just
and they
like,
used it. Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about her and her family.
You didn't take the bait.
It was like,
they felt like they didn't really need it from you, though, because the other girls were in such despair. I mean, that was like the really tough LaGanja narrative. Yeah. And I feel badly about that because I feel like, you know who I'd love to see come back for an All-Stars?
LaGanja.
Because she's so good.
She's really good.
Incredible. She's so talented. And just felt like that was like such a nightmare for her because like then she said afterwards, like, I guess she really needs weed medically and like they weren't letting her have it. Like, I would be freaking out too if that were the case. Like, and I just feel like that became such a, it's actually that I feel very attacked while it is funny and a meme, like, and we do laugh, like, the woman is having a panic attack.
It was a wild scenario and it was a very long day that day. And I knew the thing was while we were on the show, I wanted to kill her. I just wanted to kill her because of, it wasn't just what was happening on camera, because remember, I'm not seeing her confessionals. I don't know anything that's going on other than what she's showing us in the room. So that was maybe my connection with her. But the whole thing with her family and doing drag and the sympathy and the family not accepting her, I sat with a producer in my confessionals and I was like, this ain't adding up. And she's like, well, would you be willing to bring it up in front of her? I go, oh, yeah, because it doesn't add up. So when we were in that room that day and I knew it was, I knew she was going. We just knew she was going. And that's when I was just like, you know what? And that's when it went beyond. But after that, we're friends now. And she's like, that really helped her, was getting her ass kicked. And then she realized how ridiculous she was being. And, you know, she's much better now. She's lovely to be around now. I just saw her in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Yeah. She's great.
She seems to be in a great place. And I don't know that it's necessarily like mentally helpful for us as viewers to recommend that she go back into that environment that was
Well, I don't know. That's why I think she keeps saying no. I mean, I would imagine that they've asked, you know, they've asked a lot of people.
I think she's great television. She's a talented performer.
For
and that's
sure.
truly and honestly, any situation we had on set, even though I was joking about Ben De La Creme earlier, is that, you know, we all become friends. And it was just this weird thing that once you get to the very end of it, everybody was kind of like, oh, okay, this is how it works. And we're glad this happened this way. Like, it wasn't, vindictive or nasty or hateful. Like, Courtney and them were like, we knew you were going to win. I'm like, I thought you were going to win. Like, I thought Adora was going to win because she cried. You know, I don't, you don't know when you're in it. So I think that was the great thing about that season, because everybody brought something different to the, you know, to the table.
Whereas now I think you can be in production and like have some, like telegraph something in order to get a response months down the line when the episode comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, You can engineer a response from the audience months ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Based on whatever you do on the show, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, if you notice now, if you go to Twitter right now and you look at any Drag Race queen that's being nice to everyone on Twitter, that means she's trying to get liked because she's on All Stars. So I laugh at that when they're like, everybody's different and we need to embrace. Shut the fuck up. You're a nasty cunt. We know it. Like, we know you go home sixth. So it's that kind of a thing. Where they're trying to, you know, fix it before it all happens. Where we were told, don't get online, don't say a word, don't do. And so it was a different word. We filmed in June and July, and it didn't air till February. So we had all that time to shut the fuck up about it. And that was our quiet time. You know, and you knew New York. Yeah. It was weird because I worked, I think at the time, 4 days a week in Fire Island. And I took off to go film, and I didn't tell anybody except a handful of people. And as soon as I left town, as soon as I didn't show up for the first gig, they were like, something's up where you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Bianca, don't ever not show up. So it was that was when it all kind of snowballed. But I was horrified that if I said something, I would lose the opportunity. You know,
now they
got some ballsy bitches. Now they're all ballsy.
Well, it's like if you know the right people now, it's like, you know what happens in a season the second they return. It's like they tell. So one of them is fucking spilling everything. I mean, I have to really tell people that I know. I don't want to know this year. Like this was, I think, the first year where I was like, I don't want to know.
Wait, you don't want to know All Stars?
Like All Stars, I don't
13,
really care.
Oh, 13. Oh,
okay, but for the regular seasons, I always tell people, I was like, I don't want to know. And it was still spoiled for me that Rosé was in the top four. Like, I knew that about 6 weeks before. And
really?
I was like, I told you guys. Oh, yeah.
No,
but
let me ask you. Are you two, like, Reddit people? Do you go, like, search this shit out?
No.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't get into that either. But usually we end up finding out from everyone else. Or usually when I get a call while there's production going and I get a business call from a queen, because they love to ask, well, what about management? Yeah. What about t-shirts? So then I immediately know that they're back, and then they give me their version of what happens. That's really the best. That's what you get their version of.
Their version.
I'm happy with all of my choices, and I said this and I did that, but I think it's going to look great. Cut to 3 months later going, oh!
The misery.
Oh!
Fuck.
Yeah. Tricky. It's tricky. And
tricky. Another,
it's good TV. Yeah.
It is. And one other thing that I think is really different about the show now, and I think it's becoming not a problem, but it's becoming a real like rub in the show that I think is funny, but the references and sort of content that ruin the judges assume the kids will know, and they're really like 20 years old. Like when none of them could name disco songs, even Tina Burner was having a hard time like naming three disco songs in front of Rue. And like, you know, when they didn't know who Charles Nelson Reilly was, and Rue was like, fuck you guys. But Rue just seems to have a good sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
But that is like, I wonder like it's such a different, I guess it's just that's how it's going to be when time passes. Like these young girls, they hear they are the ones that say Taylor Swift legend.
Yes,
you know what
yes.
I mean? Like it's just different.
Yeah, that's where we are now. And I mean, I find it fascinating because, you know, it has something. If you want people to know that, you might want to cast people that are old enough to remember it. But
and that's my thing is like, if you can't just assume they're going to all be able to slay a Cher impression now in the year of our Lord 2021. You know, it's like
it's
can't
true.
Be too mad that that you know, like this queen who like main like it doesn't have a reference for this doesn't have the reference for this
without a doubt. Or what I find fascinating too is that when you think about that, something is being created by people that are over 50 years old, and you're curious. Creating it for a demographic of 13 to 38. It's like, there's got to be a disconnect. So,
like the fact that Denali didn't nail Bette Davis, like, it's not going to matter to the 12-year-olds.
No, and there's 15 faggots at home going, I could do it. I could do it. Yeah. I got a cigarette. Completely.
It is funny.
It is a wild ride.
How it's all changed. Yeah.
What was it like? Talk about, because you did this thing with Joan Rivers where you were on her talk show in her bed.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because I remember watching that back in the day.
Oh my God, no, it was a while ago. Yeah.
It was a while ago. It was when she was still
2014,
alive.
2014, yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah, because I was, living in New York, you run into Joan everywhere. Like, if there was an opening of a Broadway show, whether it be La Cage or anything that I was at. Well, these two events that I was at, it was La Cage and Priscilla. She was there both those opening nights, and I was in drag. It was one of those random things where they were like, hey, can you show up in drag? We had to leave Priscilla. We had to leave early because Bunny's hair, people couldn't sit behind. But we we had gone and done these events, and she was always very gracious and said hello. And this was before everybody had a phone with a camera. I don't think that was the case then. But she was always very gracious and always very nice. And then I was running around doing all these different gigs, and I was booked in Ohio and had been to Akron. I'd been to Cleveland, and it was a random gig that they wanted me for a Sunday. And then I got a call from a guy that's a comedian by the name of Tony Tripoli. And Tony used to write for Joan Rivers on Fashion Police. And he said, hey, would you want to do this YouTube show? I said, what is Joan doing a YouTube show? He goes, well, nobody wanted to pick up the show, but she said, let's do it on YouTube where I could do whatever the fuck I want. And I thought, that's insane that nobody went on. I'm like, yeah, of course, I'm doing it, signing it up. So I called my manager at the time and I said, I'd like to do this. And he's like, well, I don't think it's the best idea because, you know, she's not paying and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's Joan fucking Rivers. Joan Rivers.
It's Joan, yeah.
And he's like, well, she's not going to pay for your flight or your hotel. I'm just like, bitch, please. Like, so I flew to Los Angeles and we went into Melissa Rivers' house, and I was the third of four that she was doing that day. The guy before me was that Neve guy from Catfish on MTV.
Neve Schulman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Her. Uh-huh. She was before me. Boring. Yeah. And then I came in, and then after me was Leanne Rimes. But all of this was happening in the house, and you really do go down to the basement. And we were supposed to do, like, I think, what was it, something crazy? Jamie, was it, like, what, 15 minutes, 30 minutes or something? And we ended up doing an hour of us just cackling and talking shit about everybody.
I'm sure she fucking loved you, yeah.
She was, like, the best. And the reason why I'm in a onesie is I did my hair and stuff at the hotel and got there with the onesie, and I brought three different outfits. And I'm like, Joan, which one do you think? She goes, I like what you got on. So that's why I wore it. But she was truly the best. And I have to say that, you know, someone of her caliber didn't have to be nice, didn't have to be generous, didn't have to set you up to make your jokes. And she was all of that. And I was just like, my little 11-year-old self was going, oh, keep going. But she was the best, truly, truly.
One of my favorite memories, and I'm so happy I did this, but it was freshman year of NYU. It was 2008, so she had to be 75.
Okay.
And for some reason, it was like my third or fourth week in the city, and I wanted to do something. And I there was something on like the NYU website that was like alerting everyone to like things that were happening in the city, and it was like Joan Rivers was doing stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
So I took this girl on my floor, like down to, I don't even remember the venue.
Was it Cutting Room? Or was it Laurie Beachman?
It might have been the Cutting Room.
Yeah.
But it was like, when I tell you, it was like,
she would do two of them.
It was like very bar. It was not a theater. It was like, there was like a stage in the back of a bar. It might have been the Cutting Room. In fact, that rings true. So there might have been 20, 25 people there, but she was there. And I remember she got up and she was like, doing new material.
Yeah.
Like she was like 75.
Yeah.
She had all this new material. And I remember like, I couldn't believe that more people weren't there to soak in. Like, you know, we're going to, the word is overused, but not for her. True legend.
Completely.
True icon. And she was there killing it. And I'm telling you, doing jokes that were not for the faint of heart.
No,
like hard, rough and tumble 9/11 jokes.
Right.
Like really going for it. Like, and I was like, this is pure unfiltered Joan.
Yes.
And it's one of the things I will always remember.
And it's brilliant that, you know, at that age to even go try out material. She doesn't have to.
Oh,
she had
forget
the booking. But that was her gig. And you know, the day she went into the hospital that next morning, she worked at the Laurie Beachman Theater the night before doing a show, trying out new material. And then she had this scope that she was supposed to do the next day at a clinic. And that's when everything went downhill. And it's just, I was in Australia when it happened. And it was, so weird, because I was like, are you, no, like this, no.
She was not done.
No, and it was just fascinating that the turn of events that happened after that were pretty wild, but to know that she was in that place the night before doing jokes, it just, that's the way to go, I guess, right? You know?
Yeah.
God, I mean, I got to watch that documentary again.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, it's just amazing. A piece of work.
Yeah.
Piece of work. I mean, I haven't seen it since, I think I watched it again after she passed away, like right after, because I was like, I got to like honor this somehow, but to have that like work ethic, I think, I don't know that even people like our generation, like between me and Matt, like
Do you know anybody who like works like that?
I mean, literally, there's people that are like, oh, the pandemic is hard on me emotionally, yeah, and I can't see myself going up on stage. It's like, girl, Joan bye. Rivers would have been up for, like, yes, she, like, whatever. She would have had, like, the like mask on, whatever. She's like, I don't care what I have to do to get on stage.
Well, it's,
like,
it's,
you know,
the
nothing
hustle
was stopping her. It was clear. And, yeah, the, you know, that's, yeah, what makes her hustle a true stand up, a true workhorse, a true, yeah, like, consummate professional, that she was never done. She was never, yeah, done. And also, like, a lot of the jokes, like, you know, she knew they were bombers. Like,
of course.
Like, she was like, she had jokes that were killing and jokes that were bombing.
Yeah.
But yes, she was having so much fun doing it, I will say.
Yeah, it was, yeah, weird, because also after that time frame, you know, then they had that whole switch with the fashion police and stuff, and they had Kathy Griffin come, right, in and blah, blah, blah. And so I knew some people that were, mm-hmm, writing on the show after Joan had left. And if anybody knew this, Joan had 11 writers for Fashion Police. 11. Now, that's how you do it. 11 writers. And Kathy had decided that she didn't want any. And I'm like, honey, if Joan had 11, you need 46. That's all I'm saying. You know, it's that kind of a thing where you're like, that made sense. Because how would this 75-year-old woman know anybody or, sure, know any reference to anything unless she had, yeah, a writer's? And I mean, that's what was so great, is that as giving as she was also accepting. If it's funny, she would use it and she would get out there and try it, you know? And that's what you're supposed to do.
That documentary really did kind of put into perspective, like, though it was her against the world.
Yeah.
It really was. And I mean, like, the disrespect she was shown by Jay Leno, like, I mean, just, like, all of it. Just, like, the fact that she was still going, I mean, that is a true legend in the truest sense of the word. Name another legend. Now you really can't.
Now you can't. No, you can't.
Really?
No, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't.
You can't. Speaking of legends, this is our legendary, okay, segment.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so, honey. So this is the sort of, what would we say, Bo? The point of the show where things get a little hot?
This is the point of the show where, you know, things are said that can't be taken back. We take big swings with our opinions and we go for it, just like Joan.
Yeah.
This is our segment where we take 1 minute each to rail against something in culture while saying the words, I don't think so, honey. So stupid.
Okay.
Matt and I will go first, okay, and then Bianca will go. We'll choose a topic. Matt, do you have one?
I was going to do... I don't think so, honey. Tom Cruise stanners, but not, uh-huh, but I have something else. It's ripe in the culture and I can speak to it.
Okay. All right. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, critics. Let them get their nut. You know what? They've both been fucking through it. Let them get their nut with each other if that's what they want to do. If Jennifer Lopez, after all of this, after missing out on the Oscar nomination for Hustlers, after these flop marriages, after this flop boyfriend, A-Rod, who I'm sorry is a flop, let her get her fucking nut. Let her return to the guy who gave her best nut. Because guess what? If that's Ben Affleck, that's fine. And guess what? Look, am I like a Ben Affleck stan? I am not. But I don't think so, honey, anyone telling me he can't put it down. Because I bet when he gets to it in the bedroom, he is a one-track mind, especially when he has some of those cold brews you see him carrying from the fucking Dunkin' Donuts. So you know the guy is loaded up. I don't think so, honey, anyone being like, oh, why is she going back to him? Bitch, you're not in the bed with them. Let her get her fucking nut. Jenny from the block, more like Jenny on this cock. Ben Affleck cock. I don't think so, honey. Everything else.
And that's 1 minute.
Wait, I'm sitting here trying to think of who the fuck I'm going to talk about. And I was fascinated with your storytelling. That I agree.
Let me tell you, I'm just saying, like people are like, they were photographed looking sad together in a fucking truck in Montana. I'm like, they're sad because you're following them. They're on their way to get their nut. Not smiling yet.
I agree. Yeah.
Bowen is shaking his finger.
What?
Oh, no. I agree.
I'm
in agreement. I think you let them figure it out. And sometimes these crazy just phantoms of love's past come like creeping back into your life.
Yeah. Those are the hottest ones. Honestly, all the time, whenever you get out of a relationship, like it's one of those like things you can't explain. Like you do think about your exes and you're like, fuck, I'm sort of horny for my ex. Even if one of the reasons why you broke up is because that wasn't really popping off, you still afterward, you miss what you had. It's always Well, some I don't know, my experience anyway. It's just like there are guys that I've hooked up with in the past, like years and years and years ago, where I was just like, oh, that was only fine. Now I see them, I'm horny.
Really?
Yes.
Oh God,
I don't know what it is.
It's the patina.
Oh,
well, sorry. Go ahead, Bianca.
No, I look at anybody that I've been. Well, most of them are dead, but the ones that aren't, I just kind of go, dodge that fucking bullet. Like, thank God. Like, oh, I was right. You know, that kind of a thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes even that disgust, that like, oh, I was right. Like, I don't want to fuck this guy again, though.
There's no one that you're like, oh, the one that got away.
No.
No one?
No. I mean, except my uncle. But that was a different story. But I'm from the South, so it's accepted.
Well, that's how you learn.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I learned.
That's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, no teeth,
kid. Don't use your teeth, kid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. Some of my worst relationships are like lacks thereof, like terrible, like excuses for things. I'm like, despite myself, I don't know what this is. Again, need therapy badly.
You do need therapy.
Therapy.com. But sometimes I'm just like, ugh, for that horny for that bad situation.
Oh God. Now wait, I gotta think about for what the fuck am I gonna talk about?
Don't worry. Well, we have Bo and Yang's in the interim.
I'm gonna pull one up my ass too. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay, hot. Can we say hot? He's pulling it out of his ass. Hot. All right, so Bowen, here's the deal. This, right out of your ass, on the airwaves, is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, my performance in Girls 5 Eva. I watched myself back and I thought, ooh, I'm really gassing it. What am I doing with my mouth? Why did I carry it? Why did I, like, why, where's my center of gravity in this scene?
You're so
and, like,
stupid.
I truly, SNL has cursed me. I'm sorry to talk shop and talk about work. And I hate like just being like this, but like SNL has truly cursed me. I can't do anything but go big. And I'm only used to reading things off of a cue card
as if
that's how it works anywhere else. The credits are non-transferable when you work there. How am I going to bring this anywhere else I go?
You'll be fine.
I've been fucked over by this place of work. I don't know how to behave on a normal set.
15 seconds.
When like a fancy camera is pointed at me, like a steady cam is pointed at me or something, or a crane or whatever, I shut down. I shut down when it's on my coverage. I go, wait, I forgot what I'm...
5 seconds.
I forgot how to behave. So I don't think so many my performance on Girls 5 Eva. I'm going to retire.
You were great on it. You were so good. The show, because you kind of breezed past it in the beginning because I could now I know you're like insecure about it.
Yeah.
The show is phenomenal.
Bianca, you would love it.
Okay,
you
I have not it, watched though. It, but yes, okay, I will put it you on
the It's called Girls 5 Eva. It's on Peacock. It's about a group of women in their 40s who, there used to be a pop group.
And
they were in the 90s, and like a rapper samples one of their one hit song. Uh-huh. And so it gets famous. And so they try to like mount a comeback. And it's so funny. It's like Tina Fey and Robert Carlock executive produced it. Meredith Scardino is a creator. Our good dear friend, Matt Whitaker, and Anna Dresden.
And
they wrote for it. And I will say this, the cast is unbelievable. I love everyone. Renee Elise Goldsberry.
Oh God, yeah.
I have to give it all the way up. Because it's like Jane Krakowski on 30 Rock, but a pop star diva version
of it.
But grounded and developed in a very good way and with the character. And like, I gotta say, just like being in the room and just watching her give certain line reads, I was like, and then just everybody at Village, sorry, again, talking shop, and everyone at Village just quietly laughing. I was like, this is she should have been doing this
for years.
For years.
Yeah. She nailed it. And there's nothing she can't do. You know, she started in soaps.
Yeah.
And I actually knew her because I was like the little faggot that was like watching All My Children with my mother. And so I used to watch the daytime Emmys. And one year on the daytime Emmys, they brought out like, here are the soap stars that you didn't know could sing. And one of them was Renee Elise Goldsberry. And her voice was so beautiful. Yeah. I never forgot it. So then years, decades later, when she was in Hamilton being Angelica Schuyler, I was like, oh my God, I remember her from fucking One Life to Live.
Yeah. We made costumes for her for Color Purple on Broadway the first time because there was a revival act because I worked at a Broadway costume house. So yeah, that was that's where I first was introduced to her. Beautiful girl too. Beautiful.
She is stunning and she looks amazing. And I'm telling you, she nails so much of this comedy. I could do the thing where I say some of the jokes, but I won't ruin it for anyone that's listening. Like, but because it's just these jokes are so good, and you forget how much you miss jokes.
Yeah.
I miss jokes in comedy shows. Uh-huh. Like it's fine that people are like, I like this sweet show. No. I like the show that told a fun story. I miss jokes. I want jokes. Yeah. This show gives you jokes.
I agree.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. And also the other women are amazing too. Sarah Bareilles, incredible. Busy Phillips, we love you, Busy. You got to come on. Paula Pell, you're a fucking icon. I mean, like, true, it's just, true. Oh my God. Anyway,
I gotta
can't
watch.
Say enough.
I got to watch.
And you were great. My sister was the whole guest star of episode 6 and you were stunning, bitch.
Oh, no.
You are fab and you're a very talented young girl and you have a big future. You have a big future.
Thank you. Thank you.
For your consideration, best supporting actor in a comedy series, Bowen Yang.
Boo it. Boo, 2021. Boo, boo, boo. Yes. Perfect.
Now, for your consideration.
Okay.
For your and consideration. So now is the, do we have something, Bianca?
Yeah, I think I can go with this. I'll try. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Let's see. Because okay. I really haven't been love mad it. At anything at the moment, but yeah. Okay.
This is Bianca Del Rio's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. This whole thing with the fucking Kardashians, I'm done with them. First of all, 42 seasons of this useless fucking family that's making all this goddamn money. The bottom line is that this girl goes and fucks this guy in a sex tape, and all of a sudden, before that, she was actually doing closets for Paris Hilton. She makes a fucking sex tape. She becomes a star. Do you know how many fucking sex tapes I've made, and I'm doing this shitty fucking podcast with you? Do you understand how fucked up that is? Do you know how much dick I've had to take for this situation? Not to mention, she gets the whole family involved, and now one's a supermodel, one's a guru, one's writing seconds. A book about losing weight when everything is fucking plastic. I don't understand this anymore. There's this fine line now where the whole family looks like drag queens with lots of money. I don't understand it, but yet they become the voice of reason. See, I don't think so, honey. The problem is now they're having children that are on top of this. The children will then benefit from this seconds. Bullshit. None of them really have any talent other than sucking dick, and they've shown that to us in the videos that exist, but I don't understand the insanity and the infatuation with it. Now, I don't particularly like them, but I don't spend my time going online complaining about them like everybody else does, but I also don't want to praise them either because they're useless fucking whores. Those are the people that you would see in a clinic and go, not my style. That's what you
and
would do.
And that's one you know? Minute. That is numbers. I don't think so, honey. You know what? It's actually rule of culture number 14. Actually before that, she was doing closets for Paris Hilton. Hilton.
It's true.
That's a rule of culture.
It is
it's true.
True,
though. And it's just, it blows my mind that when people go, like, if I say they have no talent, people go, but they're rich. I go, well, I'm not denying their success. Lots of people are successful and can be completely fucking useless. Look at Raquel Welch. But in the end, you're like, this bitch. That's a RuPaul reference. That's like, wait.
Yeah, I know.
Google Raquel Welch.
But you're safe with us. We're safe with us.
But it's that kind of a thing where everybody's like, but she's pretty. But she's, sure, I'm not saying she's an ugly bitch. And with her money, she should look that good. But in the end, I don't find that validity or worth or anything. Give me talent. I'd rather you be
they're
ugly
effective.
And talented.
They're not talented. It's like Bethany Frankel. Effective, not talented.
And how many shows is she going to get? Every fucking day. She's
every
starting
show.
Some new show. Is she the only white bitch that exists? Like, what is going on here? She had a show on HBO, Bravo. I don't get it because there's so many talented people that could be in that position, you know, but
100%.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
I mean, and we now are dealing with the fact that, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is running I will say it again, she's running for governor.
God.
And you should have seen her on, not that I watched this, but I watched it on The Young Turks. Like, they showed some clips of Caitlyn Jenner on Hannity, and it was so just the first thought dumb thing you'd think she's going to say, which is, why do we need a high-speed rail? We need to, where everyone get on a plane like I do.
Yeah,
it's like, you're a fucking idiot.
Out of touch. And it's fascinating that it's even a topic. And if you say anything, someone's like, well, you can't say anything. No, you can. You can say
absolutely.
I always say to people, like, it doesn't affect me if you have a problem with me. But if it's a political figure or someone that you're supposed to vote for, if this is a person, you know, on a pedestal, yeah, it's going to be a bit difficult. And with someone like that, you're running for governor, for Christ's sake. What the fuck?
I was talking to a friend today. I mean, not to bring back Madonna, but like, he was bringing up how recently someone asked Miley Cyrus about what she thought about what Madonna said about, you know, when she was in the tub being like, COVID's the great equalizer. Miley, do you agree? And then Miley's like, of course, whatever. Like, no, it's not, because some people have it worse. But then, like, my friend was like, why do we care what, like, Miley,
thinks.
I mean, we love Miley and Madonna, but it's like, but why are they supposed to, like,
be the voice of reason? Yeah.
Exactly. Or just, like, just give out some, like, bit of, like, social commentary when it's like, they're not in power.
No.
It's like, but there are people who are, like, vying for it.
Right.
Like, let's say Caitlyn Jenner, who, like, we should probably examine what they're saying in a way that is, like, that should be examined and not, like,
taking cover behind some identity politic thing of like, well, she's trans. It's like,
no, that has nothing to do with it.
No, she's a rich white woman who is a narcissist and who only cares about herself and her money. Yeah. That's the bottom line. Like,
well, you saw the whole joke, which was like, you know, that they said that the trans youth shouldn't be in the specific, you know, games, so they couldn't have other trans people in the game.
Right,
but
right.
yet, she performs in golf tournaments, and she—it's like, well, that's the typical Republican double standard. But you're like,
she competes against women,
girl. Yeah. I don't think so, honey. No.
It's all a mess.
Hot box of Christmas shit. That's what that is. It's just wild.
100%.
And the fact that we're even discussing it just makes you go, I know. How? After we had Trump, we're going down this path. Another reality star. Girl, bye.
Girl, no.
Yeah, you say it can't get worse, and
no,
then...
it can. It can.
I hope this runoff thing with Gavin Newsom does it. It's like, I mean, Matt, you brought it up, I think, that it might actually pave, it might actually create some opportunity for Caitlin to.
Well, because this is all it really comes down to is what it always comes down to is just that if this is the case, then people just need to go out there and vote. And if people go out there and vote, then the numbers won't lie. More people are, there's just a lot more Democrats in California than there are Republicans. I guess I just hope that people that are critical of Newsom, which, you know, there are many reasons to be, many valid reasons to be critical of Gavin Newsom. You know, it could be much, much worse. And I hope that people that are critical of him just understand that, you know, we could get ourselves into a very bad situation if we fuck this up. So that's all I'm saying.
Without a doubt.
Sure.
Without a doubt.
But Jesus Christ. I mean, this episode, Bo.
What a fantastic episode.
Who are the lucky fuckers? It's us.
Rolling through. It was like a Jerry Lewis telethon. It was 3 hours and 27 minutes. Well, that's another reference that's for older people.
Yeah. No, you're safe with us.
Yeah, it's all
no,
good.
No, you're safe with us. Good. We're French. We're French. We love Jerry Lewis. We're so flattered and honored to have you talk to us.
Oh, well, please, Beyond. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited because we'll be doing something soon for the White Heist, which is happening soon. Yeah, so I'm excited.
They have me doing this, like, press thing in the Chelsea PR. They have me, like, shooting something.
Okay, they're calling me. I'm not doing any of that. They're just,
that's what you gotta do, Bo. Whenever you're complaining about being tired, you gotta take a page from Bianca. Just don't answer the phone.
Yeah, no, I didn't get that offer. I think I've just done 2 episodes. So they've got some stuff worked out. I'm not sure what it is. I think it's all virtual that I'm doing. But I'm excited to do it.
That's for the best.
Yeah, because I love Alan so much. Yeah.
Oh my God, Alan Cumming directed it, Adam Goldman written.
Oh, the best.
I mean, you and I had some like really, we had to like, they had you and I act opposite each other because like, we had to sort of create this chemistry because our characters are friends.
Yes.
And I've listened to some episodes, really, really fun.
Oh, good,
really
good.
Fun.
I'm excited. I haven't heard anything yet. I'm excited, yeah. That's good.
I can't wait to hear it.
It's going to be a good time.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Also fun to listen to the Bianca Del Rio podcast on Starburns. New episodes Thursdays?
Yes, every Thursday I have a new episode. And in the next 2 weeks, I've got some good announcements coming up. So stay tuned. That's my exclusive preview of preview. Preview. Yeah. My pre-com. Yeah, it's coming.
Your pre-com.
And we love the taste of that.
Don't you?
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you.
And doing this. And Bowen, as always, we end with a song, don't we, King?
We do. Now, Sissy, that
one. And if I fly, or if I fall, wish I could save it all. The best Rue song.
I say it's the best other than Supermodel. I would have to agree. That,
okay.
Like, all those other champion anthem fuckeries in between, no, I don't care about, but yeah.
The best Drag Race era song.
Yes, it was my favorite.
Well, of course, no, the best one is If I Dream. No, just kidding. All right, bye.
Bye. Thank you.